So, have you considered adding wild game to your holiday menus this year? You don't have to be intimidated. Up next, we're talking with a chef who specializes in preparing wild game. He can prepare almost anything. Chef Joel Olson back with us. He's nationally recognized culinary instructor. He's based in Madison, has almost 30 years of experience teaching culinary skills to children, to youth and adults. And it's always fun to have him come by. And let's talk about wild game with him for a while here. Did you get a deer this year, or do you have access to some venison or maybe some other wild game? What questions do you have about preparing venison? Let's zero in on that a little bit too. Let us know maybe your favorite way to prepare or eat wild game. Number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Chef Joe, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Larry. Happy New Year from last year. I didn't see you since last year. So
it's been a long time.
I know. Sorry about that. But yeah, it's nice to hear your voice.
And you're a hunter. How'd it go for you this year?
I had a good year. I try to the week before deer season, I used to head up towards the Mead, central Wisconsin, and there was still a bunch of ducks. It reminded me of the old days when the big flocks would take off out of the refuge. It sounded like a small jet with all the wings flapping, and it got to hear that, and some trumpeter swans, I saw them, and had shots at some geese, and it was just a wonderful experience. And then we had that big, heavy snow that just kind of shut everything down up there about noon. and then headed down to Vernon County and ended up getting a deer in opening day. So I had a wonderful week.
How did you first start trying out recipes for wild game? Was it a long time back, I imagine?
I found a menu from my very first game feed that I, because I do that the dinner every year for my friends and family. 1999 was the first year I did the game feed, and I just happened to have an abundance of stuff and some friends I knew that hunted, and I just started it. Then I found my very first menu tucked in a book over at my house in Viroqua, and it's like kind of there's the date right there.
I'm looking at the 2025 game feed menu, which involves pheasant, venison in various assorted ways, rabbit and cabbage. You've got a fried panfish. You've got, oh my gosh, turkey. Oh my goodness. There are a lot of dishes, and I've done a few of those wild game feeds too, and you wind up with a lot of dishes, but it's really always a lot of fun for people.
Oh, it's like my culinary Super Bowl. I go all out and just really, I challenge myself, and it's all for fun. It's not for money, so that makes it even better. So makes it even more challenging.
TJ, precious indeed. TJ in Monona has something for us. Question, I believe. Hi, TJ.
Hi, you guys. My question involves city squirrels versus country squirrels. I guess what I mean is that we have a fountain in the three seasons, you know, spring, summer, fall. And then in the winter, we put a heated water bath out there. And the squirrels and the birds and probably raccoons and God knows what else all use that. Now my question has to do with am I endangering not only the squirrel or the raccoon, but also my ability to eat the squirrel and the raccoon. So any comments on that? And I'll take them off the air. Thank you.
All right. So can you eat neighborhood squirrels?
If you can get away with it, I suppose. You know, if the neighbors don't miss the squirrels, I don't know. Because I don't know I don't think you can actually hunt them. I think in the city or trap them and kill them in the city. I don't know the laws on that one, but I'm thinking rabbits are the only thing a landowner can actually, you know, deal with as far as, if I'm not mistaken, but that's kind of out of my purview. I know how to cook stuff, but I don't know quite the laws when it comes to, you know, harvesting things in the city.
Yeah. But the meat itself, if you were legal to do it, from a city squirrel, is probably not a whole lot different from a
one. It might even be better because they're getting a variety of food where you'll have just acorns. You know, like say, you know, you go to a classic oak forest, and all they're eating basically is acorns, so it's going to have a pronounced, you know, kind of a nutty taste. They'll have a more rounded taste because they have a variety of foods. So that's be my answer to that.
Yeah. What's the what are common mistakes? And I ask you this pretty much every time you are on. But what common mistakes do people make when they're preparing wild game?
Overcooking it, I think, would be the number one thing. Is just tending to overcook it, especially the leaner cuts of meat. It's kind of like when people say they don't like lamb because it's always been overdone and kind of gamey. Same thing happens with wild game. You cook it too long. Some of it you have to cook long. There's cuts of meat like the shanks and things like that where you're doing it till it kind of pulls off the bone. But, you know, when you have a nice roast or something like that, you want to cook it so that it's just done so that when you slice it, the moisture is still in the meat because there is no fat in the meat itself. There's no marbling in wild game. It's all the fat's all on the outside of the muscle. So you know, and you want to clean most of that fat off. I haven't run across much wild game fat that I find enjoyable. Like you might like a little pork fat or mix like a little fat with your beef, but wild game fat tends to be kind of not tasty at all. So you're cooking pure protein, so you got to keep that in mind.
Yeah, and you mentioned adding things. Tom emailed us, and he says you should try grinding venison with bacon ends that you can get at about a buck and a half a pound, and that makes a delicious burger.
Oh, absolutely. Bacon burgers are wonderful. No, that's a great idea. Instead of just pork as well. But then you've got it does taste like bacon, so if you're willing for it to taste like that, that's a nice option to have in your repertoire of burgers, that's for sure.
Dan in Sauk City has a question for us. Let's go there. Hi, Dan.
Hello, Larry. First, I want to say, I'm going to be counting the days till June 30th. It's off my daughter's birthday. I've been listening to you for close to 40 years, 37 years. You're going to be well missed.
Oh, thank you.
And, in fact, you were my ex-wife. You were one of her professors at one time. So.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So my question is, a friend of mine gave me some pheasant. It's frozen in a Ziploc baggie or a seal-type bag, and I've never cooked pheasant before. What is the best recommendation?
I like to brine. I think we always talk about brining, too. My recipe for brine is a third cup of table salt, a third cup of granulated sugar, and then 2 quarts of water. That's just my basic brine for anything. You can change the liquid. You can change flavor. You can add flavorings to it. But I would brine it for like thaw it, and then put in the brine for maybe 4 or 5 hours and take it out. And then one of the best ones I've ever done is I cooked it in just a little bit of butter and cream, just kind of like simmered in buttered and cream. And oh my gosh, it was just wonderful with egg noodles, and you could add some leeks or some onions to that if you wanted to make a little bit more depth of flavor, but it was just so delicious. So cut it up after you brined it, and then just cook it gently, and don't season with two brine stuff with this one anyway. Don't season it with salt. It's got plenty in there.
So what's the brine? Do the brine once more, because people will say, wait a minute, I didn't get that.
It's 1/3 cup sugar, it's granulated sugar, 1/3 cup table salt, and then 2 quarts of water.
2 quarts of water.
Yep.
Okay. Did you get that, Dan?
I did, and I thank you so very much. And you've always been a joy to listen to, Larry.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate it very much. I appreciate your call, too. Because that brine is something that will probably turn up again here on the show. Amy in Oxford, your turn. Hi, Amy.
Hi, I just wanted to let you know that our number one venison family favorite is paprika venison over parsley buttered noodles. I have my grandkids from as early as they can eat, they just love this, absolutely love it. It's very tender, and you bake it for a few hours, and it's just one of our family favorites. But if I want to get fancy, though, I do a venison loin in the brandy and mushroom sauce that I flame. And I serve that over wild rice and a vegetable too. But there's one thing I have a hard time cooking is goose breast. He said, oh, that's nothing, I'll cook it. So he took it and he cooked it for 3 days in a slow cooker, and it still was leathery. So that's one thing I can't cook. So if there's anything, you know, ideas, let me know. So
goose breast.
The story that goes with the brine with last year's game feed. I was given a bunch of Canada goose breasts and a few snow goose breasts, and I brined them for 2 days in that same brine. I left them in there. And this friend, one of the friends that gave me the Canada goose, he goes, "What the heck did you do with my goose?" And I thought, "What? What do you mean?" He goes, "It's delicious." it tasted like tenderloin. It had the same texture and not gamey, and it had like beef tenderloin. It was just amazing. So, and you could see what had come out of the goose breast. It was just, you know, it had totally changed the texture. I mean, it wasn't mushy or anything, but it just really pulled a lot of gaminess out of that. And it was just absolutely delicious. It did taste like beef tenderloin. So, you know, for fowl, you know, 12 hours, maybe overnight at the most. But for the really, you know, like Canada goose breast, I say 2 days. It's just wonderful.
And again, that is a third of a cup of table salt, a third of a cup of sugar, and 2 quarts of water, Amy, and 2 days.
Yep, 2 days.
You got that?
I got that. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. You can call in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. We're talking about cooking wild game today with Chef Joel Olson of Hema Chef, nationally recognized culinary instructor and based in Madison, and a good guy, too. Questions for him, you can join in 800-642-1234. You can email to talk@WPR.org. And let's take a call from Teddy in Barnes, Wisconsin. Teddy, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, appreciate the call.
We're up here still plowing snow. So, yeah, goose breast. What I learned from my grandma, Grandma Barnes, was take the breast, put it in a bowl with milk in it, sit overnight in the fridge. Then we take it out, we cut it into strips, and we would batter it and fry it. It's like chicken tenders. It's just unbelievable.
Sounds good to me. What do you think, Chef Joel?
Yeah, milk is a wonderful marinator, wonderful way to tenderize. I do that with my elk and venison liver. I soak it in milk. The lactic acid kind of helps break things down and pulls out some of the impurities. And that's a great and frying it. You fry anything. I'm for it.
it's gonna work. Yeah, I remember. Way back, Cy Littleby's Guide to Cooking Wild Game. Cy reported that if you put the goose in cold water, salted water, and then you bring the water up to just to the point of boiling, and then you take it out, and you will be amazed at the about an inch and a half of something on the top of the water that has been taken out of the goose.
Sure.
That is, then go ahead and cook it however you want to, and you're going to turn out all right.
That's a great, because you think about if you ever boil chicken or make soup or something, you get that same foam on top, even from chicken. So, yeah, that's a great idea. Get rid of some of those impurities and the different, that's a great idea as well.
So we heard about a fancier recipe from a caller earlier. What about a fancier recipe for hosting a holiday party? What do you recommend?
Oh, I try to stick with just for game feed, of course, that's different. But if I'm doing what I recommend for my classes and stuff is to stay within your comfort level in terms of, like, don't try out something on your guests unless you are really, you know, a good cook and you know that it's going to work. Mm-hmm. Just so that there's nothing more embarrassing. I hope you like this. You know, it's the first time I've tried it. I really, you know, I never want to say that when I'm when I'm hosting something. But I love that paprikash, the paprika venison that she was talking about. Something like long and simmered and just some. I can imagine that with mashed potatoes would be wonderful, nice and buttery and creamy mashed potatoes, and, you know, something that's been cooked for a long time and just can kind of scoop and pour, as opposed to trying to fillet do a roulade where you're taking a little part of a roast or whatever and filleting it open and stuffing it and wrapping it up and tying it. And that's a totally different ballgame when it comes to cooking. You know, this. I sometimes the most elegant things are sometimes the most simple things.
Yeah.
And people really appreciate it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about for a minute before we get back to the recipes. I was online looking at your website, and you offer a lot of classes.
Yeah, I do. It's the busiest I've ever been, and ironically, this is my 30th season of teaching cooking. I've actually reached 30 now. 30 years I've been teaching cooking, so and still love it. Still love sharing my knowledge and the love of food, and tonight I have a parent and child dumpling class that I'm teaching, international dumplings, and so I do something different every day, so I'm really, lucky to have found something that I really enjoy and that people tend to want to enjoy with me.
Yeah, it sounds, and you work with the broadest age range. I mean, you like to work with children, I notice.
Yeah, I do a lot of kids' classes. Our website, hembachef.com. We've got summer camps coming up. That's usually my busiest time where other people are off. That's when I'm working. It's just been a wonderful. I've had some kids through the years that have actually gone off to culinary school, and had one kid that was in my summer camp out in Virginia that actually went to Top Chef Junior, was on TV, and it's been really really been fun. So all of our, and I have I also have the recipe for the brine on our website as well for anybody who didn't get it. We've mentioned it a couple times. So
how do you get, or how can we get children involved in cooking wild game? I mean, what is there any magic to that?
That's a great question, because I don't do too much of that, only because a lot of people don't have the
game.
But I think it goes to the number one thing, getting kids to try it. And if they've had a chance to make it, they have a better chance of trying it as opposed to here, try this. And then what I always did with my daughter, who just loves food, and she's a great cook now, she's a sophomore in college, and I always made her explain to me, why don't you like something? Like, if you don't like it, why? And just give me some kind of a reason why, so that we can work on it, or I can understand, instead of just, no, I don't like that. So I think just, and not cajoling, not hiding it, that I've never hidden food inside of food, just like trying to get, pureed, stuff so that kids would know what they're eating. I think they should know what they're eating. But I think it's just having being exposed to it and the joy of somebody else enjoying it. Sometimes they see people loving something, they're like, hey, maybe I will try that. So experience, I guess, is the number one thing.
You mentioned rabbit earlier, and John's wondering, what are the best ways, different ways to prepare rabbit?
Oh, my dad, when he was alive up in Marshall at the Elks Club, they used to do a rabbit feed where they do a curry. They dredge it and just nice little curry, and then cook it and roast in the oven, roast it, and all falling off the bone. It was amazing. So I like that. I like slow cooking it and pulling it off the bone. And one of my favorite things to do, and it's called it's not too fancy. It had a fancy name. It's called a rillette, which is where you take the rabbit meat and some cream cheese, and you paddle it in a mixer so that it becomes like a paste. You're adding seasonings in there too, maybe some thyme and a little bit of brandy if you want, and some onion powder and garlic powder, and it turns into a wonderful cracker spread. It's called a rillette. It's wonderful. So that's kind of a fun thing to do.
Cooked rabbit, by the way.
Yep, cooked rabbit. Yep,
rabbit's cooked first.
Yep.
And what about squirrel, as long as we're at it?
Oh, it's the squirrel. It's the number one thing that people, one of the number one things at Game Feed they look for is they want the squirrel pizza. So I cook it until a friend of mine, Steve Owen from Sun Prairie, he's been giving me canned squirrel. He canned squirrels that he gets. So we just go through the squirrel you cook it in canned meat, basically. We go through it like four times and so make sure there's no little bones, because they have tiny little bones. It's kind of a bummer to bite into something. There's a bone in it. And then I make a pizza out of it, use it as a pizza topping. It's just absolutely delicious.
And you had fish on your menu, and I know there are people who have some frozen fish in the freezer yet from last summer.
You bet.
What about preparing fish?
What I've done with some of my bluegills, especially when they're fillets, maybe you're tired of having, fried fish. I'd go through it again with a fine tooth, fingers, feeling for any of those little bones that you might have missed. Makes a wonderful chowder, like a potato and fish chowder or bluegill chowder. It's absolutely delicious. Some corn in it. And I put I make it so the soup is totally done, and then I put the fillets, these nice little bite-sized fillets, in it right at the very end so that they don't fall apart and turn into just like mush. So so you have some texture. So it's a wonderful way to use up some of the those fillets. And also, I like fish loaf, too. I remember my Aunt Bessie here many years ago in Madison visiting her and my Uncle John, and she would make salmon loaf, which is like a Betty Crocker type of recipe with breadcrumbs and a white sauce and eggs. And I've done that with fillets as well, walleye, and I did a northern pike salmon loaf a few years ago, and this year I did salmon and cod, a cod that somebody had, brought me from Alaska. They were up fishing in Alaska and brought back some cod. So it's a couple ideas right there anyway.
Yeah, those are good ones. What are the here's a crazy one. What are some of the craziest meats, meats that you've tried?
Well, last year, my friend Steve asked me if I wanted a possum, and I'm like, sure, because I always wondered what possum tasted like, but I really didn't want to hunt one and deal with cleaning it, and he was more than happy to do it, and it's delicious. I braised it, you know, cooked it in liquid. I cooked, you know, boiled it basically and let it simmer till it was falling off the bone, I made a gumbo out of it, and I had some little tiny octopus, made it really even stranger. I had a gumbo and octopus gumbo. I mean, a possum and octopus gumbo, and for some reason, I had quite a bit of it left over. I don't know why, but...
Well, you always tell people what they're eating, so that may have,
absolutely,
that may have turned some people off from trying the gumbo.
Absolutely, I did. I tell them back in the day when I used to do this game feed in Viroqua, when I was totally living in Viroqua, I didn't have all the lightings that I have now, and so it was dark, and people said it's good, but I wish I knew what I was eating. It was always the biggest complaint if they're eating in the dark and couldn't see what they were eating. So, maybe it was better back then that way. I don't know. So,
can you, what do you think, or maybe you can you talk about chronic wasting disease and foodborne illnesses associated with wild game cooking?
Yeah, the chronic wasting disease, I know that's a tough one to deal with, only because of, you know, everybody's so worried, and they should be, because we don't know what that harm could be to humans. But essentially, when it comes to foodborne illness, waterfowl, pheasants, they carry, especially pheasants, carry a lot of salmonella. They have it. I mean, it's a lot of them have it. So you really want to make sure that you've cooked it totally through. You don't want any pink. You want it totally, you know, pulling off the bone, totally well done. So you totally destroy any chance of having any kind of foodborne illness. Venison, I push it a little bit. Of course, the tenderloin is wonderful. I do a tartare, which is basically raw with some, maybe a little bourbon and some bitters, you know, sprinkled on top for an old fashioned, you know, it's carpaccio. That type of thing. But normally I cook things pretty much all the way through. Pushy birds and squirrels and rabbits. And yeah, raccoon last year we had as well, which is absolutely insanely good. It's delicious, just sweet, wonderful meat. So I'm looking forward to hopefully having raccoon again next year.
Yeah, you want to stay away from the fat, though.
Absolutely. Again, I cook it in a pot until it's tender, pull it off the bone, and then I used it to make a sandwich. My dad used to make a big beef sandwich with like French bread and sliced beef and cheddar cheese, and then wrap it up and put it in the oven and let the cheese melt. And I did that similar thing with my raccoon and some wonderful cheese from probably from Hooks, I think. So, yeah, it was fun.
Sally emailed, her boyfriend brought back some antelope meat to Thanksgiving this year, and she was too nervous to try it. Did she miss out?
She sure could have. She sure could have missed out. I was thinking today that I wish I had. I used to have an antelope person. There's a person whose father-in-law went antelope hunting out west, and I haven't. He hasn't gone, or maybe, you know, for a while. So I was just lamenting that I haven't had antelope for a while earlier today. That's funny. She should ask that. So again, if it was done right, absolutely, you missed it up. But again, it could have been one of those things like, well, okay, now I know I don't like it. Because it's delicious meat, and also too, and most of the hunters know, like if it's a clean kill, and you don't have the animal doesn't run, it's going to be much better meat than if an animal is like, you know, if you have to track it, if it's wounded and it's got the adrenaline going. And so, and I still hang my, I age my deer. I did a long neck buck last year. Again, I hung it for 4 months in my, in a nice secluded spot outside, and just aged wonderfully. So I just, you know, I totally think that's a great thing to do if you can get away with it anyway.
Gene emailed, what's the difference in taste between squirrel and possum?
Oh, the texture. Squirrels much more. The texture is the number one thing because they're smaller pieces where you can get larger pieces. Think of like chicken legs, like when you kind of pull chicken, you know, meat off a chicken leg or thighs. That's what kind of possum is like. And again, it depends on what the possum eats. They eat a bunch of stuff. They get into all sorts of stuff. So their meat is much more flavorful because of the variety of food that they eat. Were squirrels, acorns, nuts, just pretty much what they, you know, wherever they, the flavor of what they were eating, basically going back to that we talked about earlier. So I think that possum is much more flavorful, and it can, and it's good in gumbo. I still have some.
And raccoon's pretty darn good, too.
Oh, I love it.
And on that note, we're out of time. Boy, the time flew by, Joel, and I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. We'll do a longer stretch the next time you're on the air. How about that?
Hey, that sounds great, and have a wonderful holiday season, and look forward to talking with you again.
Chef Joel Olson of Hema Chef, a nationally recognized culinary instructor based in Madison, 30 years of teaching culinary skills to kids and youth and adults alike. Tomorrow on the show, we talk with the leaders of the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection about the latest scams targeting holiday shoppers. And we'll also talk about the new novella out. It's titled Star Song and written by Patricia Skalka, who we've had on many a time. And thank you very much for listening today. This and all of our shows are a team effort, including Clara Niper, Joel Patnaud, Lee Rayburn, Jeff Robbins, our executive producer, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. And stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.